Patrick Adams.
And I'm Caroline Lashier.
And this is Librarians of Littles, a podcast where we review picture books, include makerspace ideas, and give tips and tricks for working with our youngest learners in the library setting. Today, we have two wonderful books to share, both of them coming from the Texas 2x2 list, a list that encourages children from the ages of 2 to 2nd grade to read as many books as possible. Each year, the Texas Library Association comes up with this list of 20 wonderful books to share with young readers. Our first book today is titled Boop. It is published by Harper's Collins. In 2023, the author is B. Birdsong, and the illustrator is Lindsay Hunter. As stated, this is a book that is on the Texas 2x2 award list for 2024.
Bee Birdsong is a former teacher. She lives in North Carolina with her husband, son, and rescue dog. She also does school visits. Some of her other books include I Will Be Fierce, illustrated by Nidhi Chanani, Sam's First Word, illustrated by Holly Hatton, How to Spot a Best Friend, illustrated by Lucy Fleming, and Goat is the Goat, illustrated by Kelly Murphy.
And the illustrator, Lindsay Hunter, is an award-winning Scottish author, illustrator, and hand-lettering artist based in Peckham, London, UK. She creates illustrations and hand-lettering art for many different mediums, including magazines, toys, packaging, and advertising campaigns. And she has worked with the BBC, Nike, Hallmark, and Macy, just to name a few. Some of her other books include What If Pig?, written and illustrated by herself, Lindsay Hunter. Little People, Big Dreams, written by Astrid Lindgren. If You Had a Jetpack, written by Lissel H. Detlefsen. And How to Write a Great Story, written by Carolyn Lawrence. And to get into the story, the book Boop is a cute story of many dogs and their snoots getting booped. This book introduces the concept of a snoot on a dog and how to boop it. It's a rhyming story with many dogs with snoots ready for booping. I really enjoyed this book. I am a huge dog lover. I have two dogs of my own, and I just thought that this was just a fun story for kids to read. There is rhyming that's going on. The illustrations are so fun and cute with all the different dogs, the different types, the different shapes and sizes of the dogs, and all of the dogs wanting their snoots to be booped. It just brought a huge smile to my face as I was reading through it, and I've really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to sharing it with my students because I know how much these kids love dogs and really just any kind of animal, honestly. Most of these kids are very much animal people, so dogs, cats, whatever, they love them all, and I just think that this book is so much fun. I do also love that there is a page at the beginning that explains, you know, even though you love dogs, you need to make sure that you speak with your adults and the dog's adults before you ever approach a dog. You know, we don't want anyone to get hurt because a kid is just running up to a strange dog and trying to pet it. So an important warning to say, hey, make sure it's okay with your adults. Make sure it's okay with the dog's adults before ever approaching a dog, touching it. Super important. But I just thought that this was a sweet and cute story. And I love that the one dog that's on the cover kind of is in every single picture, just wanting additional boops of his snoot. It's just such a cute story. Like I said, it just made me smile the whole time I was reading it. And if nothing else, I think that my students will enjoy it because of my enthusiasm while reading it, because it's just such a cute and whimsical story. The illustrations are just so bright and engaging. I love the whole thing. The story itself, I think it's a little simplistic, but I still think that it is a fun read for the students. I think that it will be so much fun to read out loud and to kind of get the kids to go along on the journey with me as we read through the story. So I'm going to say that this is at least a 4.5 out of five bookmarks, I'm thinking like at least 4.5, maybe five, just because it's so much fun.
I think that's fair. I thought I really liked the story a lot. And I'm glad you mentioned about the disclaimer at the beginning, because that was my only concern when I was reading it. I was like, okay, kids are going to go up to weird dogs. They're going to touch them. But yeah. No, that's, I think that's a, I loved that they talked about having, you know, talking to your big people about asking for permission first before touching a real life dog. And I think another fun thing to do with this book would be to have everybody bring in a, like a little stuffed animal, and so they could boop the snoots on their little stuffies. And it, if they have a dog stuffed animal, great. That's a fun one to use. But I mean, really, it could be any kind of stuffy. I think that would be a fun addition to that, and kind of having the kids read with their stuffed animals. I think they would really, really enjoy that. And then you could always bring in a couple of your own. If the kids don't have any with them, you could always use puppets or any of your displays around the library or anything else that you have lying around to kind of make it a little bit more engaging and let the kids interact with it a little bit more. So I agree. It was a super cute book, and I love how interactive it was. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah.
Excellent choice.
Thank you. I mean, the Texas Library Association, they picked a banger with this one. It's a great story. I really loved it. And I love that idea of having the kids bring in like a stuffy so that they can all boot the snoots. That's a great idea. And a makerspace activity, materials that you might need for this makerspace activity, pretty simplistic. Those pattern blocks that like every single campus always has, those yellow hexagons and the green triangles, the orange squares, the red trapezoids, those blue parallelograms, and the tan rhombuses. You could also, if you wanted, you could stop there, but if you wanted to go a little further, you could have a picture mat with a pre-made image. But my idea is to give those kids those pattern blocks and have them make their own dog or make their own other kind of a pet using the pattern blocks to build their animal. In our book, it shows different types of dogs, so they were different shapes and different sizes and different colors, so mm-hmm. the kids can use those as ideas, but then they get to build their own, and we can kind of look at how every student makes theirs a little bit different and kind of unique, just like all the students and all the dogs in the book.
Yeah. I love that. It kind of gives the kids a little bit of creativity and takes some ownership over the story as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. And did you see online too? There was a story kit on the author's website that there's like pre-made patterns on there that like you could, it was for to make the puppets from the book, but it was okay. Like it's the kind of puppets that you just cut out and you put on a popsicle stick, not like paper bag puppets, but like the popsicle stick kind.
That's so super cool.
Yeah, that would be a fun one to kind of, not the story needs like particular reenactment. You could probably reenact it with just like any of the stuffies or puppets or whatever you've got, but to have the actual illustrations from the story.
That's awesome.
That you could kind of act out too. That was fun.
So we'll make sure that we include the author's website in the show notes. So if anybody's interested in going there and finding those, they can go through our show notes and it'll be linked in the description. There we go. Cool.
All right. I know we didn't really have anything down for management. Does that sound like an okay management tip?
I think this is a good idea.
Okay.
Because
sometimes I don't know if it's too obvious. Well, and I'm like,
here's my thought on that. My thought is that it's obvious to us because we've been doing it for so long.
That's true.
But we have a lot of, especially in the state of Texas, we have a lot of librarians that are kind of being thrust into working with pre-K.
That's a good point.
And haven't had that experience before. So even if it seems obvious to us, I feel like sometimes going with the obvious, because it's not obvious to everybody else, is a good thing. I think it's a good idea. So I like this management.
That's a good point.
So
okay,
let's go with it.
All right. Okay, so today for our Librarians of Littles management tip, we're going to be talking about defined seating for students. A lot of our younger learners, our pre-K and kindergartners, they are still learning really everything. And they are learning where their body is in space, which is kind of a hard concept to teach. And it can be kind of a difficult thing to learn depending on the student and their life experiences and any of their needs. So I think both of our libraries, we both have a colorful rug with squares to kind of show students where to sit. When we're first learning how to sit in the library, I kind of point out where the squares are on the rug and kind of have the kids notice, like, okay, my spot is orange. I'm going to keep my body in the orange. And I don't really care how they're sitting as long as they're kind of in the orange somewhere and they're not sitting on their feet, just so the kids behind them can see, because a lot of kids will tend to sit like, they'll sit like crisscross, but like up on their feet kind of so that they're like higher up, and that makes it so that the kids behind them can't see. So I do tell them they have to sit flat so that people behind them can see the book and kind of experience everything. But then that colorful rug just makes it so that the kids can kind of see where their body needs to be in space, so they can kind of share their space a little bit better. For our kids who need a little bit more help with that, we have something called cube chairs in our libraries. The cube chairs are about 18 inches by 18 inches by 18 inches, and it's exactly like it sounds. It's just a chair. It's a colorful chair that's shaped just like a cube, and it's incredibly durable. I think I've been using the same one for like the ones in my library, I know, are at least, this is my 17th year working with pre-K kids, and it's the same chairs that I've been using for 17 years. They're ridiculous. They're kind of expensive. I think it's like $100 a chair, but it's lasted for 17 years and they're going strong. Sometimes if kids get a little bit too wiggly on the chair and kind of push up with their legs, you can, if you really need to, put Velcro on the bottom of it with the kind of rougher side, and it'll stick to carpet really well. That doesn't stick to rugs very well at all, but it sticks to carpet ridiculously well, to the point where you have to like kick it up. So if you need the chair to like stay down because the kid is like kind of pushing back on their chair too much and it's like dangerous for them and they might fall back and hit their head, you can put that rough side of the Velcro down on that so that they kind of stay, their chair stays down and the kids can stay safe and they have their own very well defined space so that they can kind of learn to keep their hands to themselves and really stay in their own space so that they can attend to the story a little bit better.
I completely agree with you. Having that defined seating space, whether it's like an assigned spot on the carpet or just that they stay in their own square, whatever square they end up on the carpet, absolutely. That's definitely important for those students. The only other thing I might add is that I let my kids sit almost any way they want on the carpet. Like you said, not sitting up on their feet or on their knees because people behind them. But I also, the one other thing that I don't let my kids do is a lot of the kids want to do that W sit where their knees are kind of bent back. And that's the one other one there. And I'm like, I can't have you sitting that way. I don't want you to mess up your knees. Being as old as I am, it just hurts my knees just to look at it. But I also just, it's not good for the kids' legs. And so that's the one other thing about sitting that I don't let my kids do. They can, if they want to sit with their legs to the side or something like that, I'm totally okay with that as long as they're staying in their own space. That visual, that square that they're sitting on or the circle or whatever shape your carpet has, it's so helpful for them to see a boundary, because otherwise they'll just kind of climb on top of each other half the time. mm-hmm. And then the cube chairs are amazing, and the cool thing about the cube chairs is that they have two different, like you can flip it over. So there's like a higher side where they sit up a little bit more. And then there's the lower side where they're kind of in the chair a little bit more. And then for even another substantial cost, I'm sure they've got those trays that can go over it so that they can sit in that chair and have, if they need like a fidget or something, and that tray kind of helps give a little bit even more defined space if needed for some of our kids. Or that just gives them a surface that they can work at. And the cube chairs are amazing, and they are incredibly durable. Absolutely. I love them. They're such an expensive investment, but totally worth it. Absolutely.
They really are. I know. I feel a little bit bad recommending something so expensive, but like it will last forever. Like
Yeah.
the ones that I've got that are more than 17 years old, because they were already in existence before I started working. Like so, and they're shown no signs of like
Yeah.
wear really. Like they're not super duper clean anymore, but they're not cracking or like they're not they're still we still use them every day, and
Yeah.
I see no need to replace them anytime soon. So if it can last for, 20 plus years, then it's a good investment. So
For sure.
yeah.
Absolutely. And yeah, that defined seating, such a hard concept. Like that, like you said, keeping the kids and having them understand where their body is in space. Just such a weird concept that you might not think about. You had to learn that at some point. And so we have to be the ones that help those students learn that so that they can be aware of it and understand. Very important. I agree.
All right, so the next book that we're going to talk about today is called Just One Flake. It's published by Abrams Books for Young Readers in 2023. The author and illustrator of this book is Travis Yonker. Is that how you say it? Yonker, right? Okay.
Yes. This book is has won many awards and is on many lists, including the Texas 2x2 Reading List, the Minnesota Star of the North Picture Book Award list, the Missouri Building Block Picture Book Award, and the Wyoming Buckaroo Book Award K through 3.
Travis Yonker is a school librarian in Michigan. He also helps make a podcast about children's books called The Yarn. His father was born in the Me Netherlands and immigrated to Canada. He attended college in Holland, Michigan, and met his wife. His other books include Caboose, illustrated by Ruth Chan, which came out of February 4th of this year, The Ship in the Window, illustrated by Matthew Cordell, Blue Floats Away, illustrated by Grant Snyder, and The Very Last Castle, illustrated by Mark Pett.
Okay, and so before we get into this book, I want to tell you a little bit, just kind of a brief side note. Have you used teaching books for schools? Have you used that resource before?
No, what is
Okay,
that?
so this is a super cool resource. Like a lot of the public libraries have it, and a lot of schools have it available also. It's so you can search for like most authors. And it'll give you any kind of interviews that they've done. A lot of times it'll link to their personal websites. And one of the super cool things that it has is it will give you, oh, it gives the authors an opportunity to record a message where they tell you how to pronounce their names. Because some of these names are crazy, incredibly difficult to just like phonetically try and figure out. And
I
so,
feel that.
yeah. And so, Travis Yonker did this, and so that's where I kind of found it that they pronounce it Yonker. Apparently, his dad was born in the Netherlands. They moved in, so in Dutch, it's Yonker. They moved, his dad was a child and immigrated to Canada. When they got to Canada, everyone pronounced it Jonker with the J sound, and that's how they pronounced it. So when he was a kid, he pronounced it Jonker. When he grew up, he went to a mostly Dutch area of Michigan. Holland, Michigan. That's where he went to college. That's where he met his wife. And everybody there, because they're from that Dutch heritage, pronounced it Yonker. And so he's kind of gone back to that original pronunciation from when
That's
his
interesting.
dad was a child, which is super cool. But yeah, teaching books for schools, if you find that resource, if you have access to it, like our local libraries, one of the local libraries in our area, can give you access to it if the school district doesn't. My school district does have access to it also, but you can search for a lot of these authors and illustrators, and it gives interviews, it gives their website links, and not everybody does it, but a lot of the authors will make an audio recording telling you how to pronounce their name and give a little story as to why it's pronounced that way or how to pronounce it, like it rhymes with this or whatever. So, super cool resource.
That's
Little bit
helpful.
of a tangent, but really cool resource for any librarian that's wanting to pronounce the names correctly. So, all
Cool. Thank you. All right, so in this book, it's about a determined little boy who struggles to catch a snowflake on his tongue during a snow day. Eventually, he does catch a snowflake, although it is on his mitten, not his tongue. I thought this was a really cute, relatable story for children. I think that's probably the thing that most kids do first when they go outside for a snow day is try and catch that snowflake on their tongue if it's actively snowing. That's, I think, number one thing is to catch your snowflake on your tongue. Second thing, go build a snowman. That's just what you do, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah, and it is hard to do. It's true. So I thought that most kids would really relate to this and kind of identify with the little boy in the book. It's got simple illustrations and simple text. It makes it really easy to understand for our little learners. It could be used as a launch point to discuss both social and emotional skills because the boy shows great perseverance, really struggling to catch that snowflake, and he tries several different ways to solve his problem. Or you could also do a STEM lesson about snow in general and individual snowflakes, because at the end of it, he does catch that snowflake on his mitten and he kind of gets to really see what it looks like before it melts away. And then, of course, at the very end, he makes his own snowflake out of a little paper. So you could do lots of different lessons with this one, even though it's really short and really only takes a couple of minutes to read through, but you can really go a lot of different directions with it. So I enjoyed it a whole lot.
Yes, I agree. This was a very cute story. I love that he had a goal in mind. And even though he didn't reach his goal, he was kind of content with himself, especially at the end of the book, where he was like, you know what? I caught it on my mitten. I've seen what it looks like, at least. And then he goes inside and he's like, you know what? The hot chocolate probably tastes better than the snowflake would anyway. But now that I've seen a snowflake, I can make my own. And he's able to do that. So, like, even though he didn't reach his original goal, he was still able to find some contentment in what he was able to achieve for himself and kind of move past being slightly unsuccessful to get to another goal of his, of being able to make his own snowflakes, which is really cool. And it's a good lesson for a lot of kids. You know, sometimes we set goals that we just can't reach, but if we learn something from it and can move forward with it, then it's still a success, right? And so, yeah, I thought this was a really cute story. I like the simple illustrations to it. I like that it's just kind of like that relatable kind of art of like all of the snowflakes are just kind of, they're just white, but they have that little crisscross in the middle of them, and that kind of like that art style kind of reminds me back to when I was younger and I was trying to do drawing and stuff like that, and like so it's kind of relatable in that sense as far as the illustrations go as well. And I just like that the kid was just so determined. Like at one point I was reading and I'm like, he's just like yeeting himself towards that last snowflake, like he just kind of jumps and goes for it. And that's just it was just a fun story to read. I enjoyed it a lot.
So for the makerspace activity for this one, it's a little obvious, but I think it was great because it was obvious, where you just get white paper and scissors and cut out paper snowflakes with your students. There's a whole lot of, I mean, just if you just Google, paper snowflake cutout, like there are so many templates that you can use online where it shows you how to like fold up the paper and where to cut on the lines, which I think would be a great place to start with it. And then hopefully eventually your students would, figure out, you could teach your students anyway how to fold the paper appropriately and kind of make their own cuts so that they can create their own snowflakes. This would be a fun one to do around December, January. You can cut out all those paper snowflakes and then hang them up all over the library, or maybe even in the hallways at school, like leading to the library, so it kind of looks like it's snowing in the halls. I think kids would get a kick out of seeing all of their artwork all over the place. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And as we've said in previous episodes, you know, using scissors and practicing those cutting skills is something that can be a challenge, but this was a good way to practice those skills in a controlled setting where they can work on that grip with the scissors and cutting appropriate things. And, you know, it's going to be something that some of the students will struggle a little bit more with, but giving them that practice will help build those muscles in their hand so that they're successful. And yeah, because, I mean, being at the elementary school, I still have students in like third and fourth grade that struggle to cut. And I think it's because they didn't always get these opportunities to practice. And so I think offering that to our younger students, giving them those opportunities to practice using the scissors in a controlled setting so that they can build up those muscles and get that practice in, super important. And I love that idea. And I really like the idea of having the snowflakes like kind of hanging from the ceiling, hanging in the hallway. If nothing else, maybe even just kind of wishing that snow day into existence sometimes, right?
Yeah. I wished for it real hard this week. It didn't quite happen, but that's okay.
On my way to work yesterday, it was snowing. It was just random flakes. It wasn't sticking, but it was snowing. And I was like, man.
What good are you, snow? In thinking about it just now too, you could also do that same thing with a bigger piece of tissue paper so that it's just a little bit thinner and easier for the kids to cut through, because once you do fold over that paper, it will be a little bit thicker and a little bit more difficult to cut through. But doing it with tissue paper might be a good way to kind of have a thinner thing that you're cutting through, make it a little bit easier for the kids. And I do like cutting this way in particular too, because it's not like, you could do it on a line and you could print out a template for the kids to cut on, but you could also just do snips in it, and it's not necessarily like, it doesn't have to be like particular shape that the kids are going for. So if they don't, you know, if they mess up or if they just snip a couple of times, like, they're still successful, you know?
Yeah. And on that same kind of path, I think I've also seen people do like coffee filters and stuff too.
Ooh, like, yeah. Coffee filters would be small, good.
So that might work too. Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. And, but it's also like coffee filters also, like you said, thinner than that printer paper for sure too. So I like that idea. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Maybe someone is still getting some snow. It sounds like people a little bit further north than us are still getting some snow, so maybe they can still use that idea this year. We'll see.
They probably can. It's still...
Yeah.
Well, I don't know when this will post. It's a little longer. It's February for us. It's winter now. I don't know when this will post, but it would still be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you all for joining us today on this episode of Librarians and Littles. We hope you found some fresh ideas for inspiring young readers. Please be sure to subscribe and connect with us on social media.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Librarians of Littles. We hope that you've enjoyed it. Check back each Wednesday for a new episode. Librarians of Littles is a podcast produced and hosted by Patrick Adams and Caroline Legier. Editor, Patrick Adams. Our theme song is performed by J.D. Adams. You can follow us on Instagram at Librarians of Littles. You can follow us on Blue Sky at littleslibrarian.bsky.social. And you can send us your emails at librarianoflittlespod@gmail.com.